It's 4:45 on Downtown. Time for Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company at 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. Eric Meehan with us in the house. Hello, sir.
Hello, Radioland. And you too.
Understand you had a good time over at the Common Ground Fair over the weekend.
I enjoyed it. I felt like a much like I you know, often brag that I like to fish, but I never fly fished until I you know, got set up by my mother-in-law for my 40th. I had never gone to the Common Ground Fair, but we always sell tickets, which is a harrowing experience for any retailer, because it's this sudden onslaught a couple days before the fair. And then when you run out, people are so angry that you're out of these advanced sale tickets. But now I get why. I mean, it's many props to Mofka. They've got the thing on lockdown in terms of order. I mean, I was stunned. I was really stunned. I mean, it was, you know, especially the concept of anyone having survived through, I remember Woodstock 99 or whatever it was. You know, it hit any small town with a mass of people crazed for whatever reason, and certainly agrarians are as crazed as anyone else, right? And it was orderly. It was beautiful. We got in with no hassle. But then when we came out, yeah, there was like this line several hundred people deep, and which I respect. I mean, not too many people in there, right? But people were still filtering in, and I was like, wow. So we got the hot tip to get there at the right hour.
Nice.
It was very, very cool. And I kept thinking that that's really what fairs were like, you know, back in the day, is they were essentially centers of commerce for farmers and makers of wares. And it was really cool. And we came home with a composter.
Nice.
Like that, like you do, you know?
Sure.
It's you know, my son was so upset. Like he didn't get anything. I'm like, what did you want? We got the goat's milk soap.
There you go. They did have a great t-shirt this year with the piggies.
That's right. Which my wife, actually, that was, to be honest, that was the only real line there was getting into that like certified Mofka tent
to purchase the
stuff. So yeah, Christine grabbed one, but it being chilly, all the sweatshirts were gone. So she did not get him anything like that. But last year he got a wooden sword. So he's placated. It's cool.
And did he need to wear his hard hat over there?
No, he actually, because it was so gusty, we convinced him not to wear the hard hat. No, yeah, to folks out in Radioland, he came down that morning. Both kids were super excited, which I love, you know. But he came down in a costume that I said to Rich looked like he was about to audition for the Village People. hard hat, hammer, and we had to explain to him that it wasn't that.
Young man.
I don't know what kind of fair that would be, but it wasn't that kind of
fair. No, not at all.
And my daughter, of course, came down in her unicorn horn, which was entirely appropriate.
Yes.
But it was very almost like Renaissance. It was very cool because there wasn't like the scream of the whirligigs and the.
Yeah,
the,
that's great.
It was really cool. I dug it, and I see why people like to go. It was agoraphobia, the fear of crowds. Yeah, I definitely border on that. Oh, yeah, it's one of those like maybe not again, but that was cool.
Where are we going on our wine journey?
Well, so
I was gonna
go. We're still in California, and I was gonna talk about cab, but I decided the cab's boring because I mean we'll talk about cab at many junctures in our wineology, but I got a really cool wine in for Wine Club, and thinking about the fair. Where I just was, and I just kind of wanted to talk about it and a sort of a hot wine term. And that wine term is orange wines, right? Mm. But what was really cool at the fair and what I really dug about the vibe was that, and it's certainly not a new concept or a new term, but what is old is new again. I mean, we've really, since World War II, and I keep talking about this in terms of the foods we eat and a lot of the things that we sort of consume, is that we wanted bigger, better, faster, more, and we got it. But that really screwed us up in a lot of ways. And I think the Common Ground Fair, going now for 40 years, which is about the right timetable, when people started to realize that some of this stuff was really screwing us up, went back to the land, went back to realizing, you know what, maybe some of that bigger, faster wasn't better. And we need to kind of, you know, revitalize our lives with some of the practices that were very common, essentially pre-war, pre-us getting involved in world wars. We certainly had our fair share of conflict as a nascent nation here, but once we started to have to send our boys over, we figured out scientifically how to send them over with foods and things like that, and it really changed our diets and our way of life. However, we did send people over to places where there was a lot of food culture. And another place that there was a lot of food culture because of immigrants from those places was California. And we sort of touched on this last week about how there was a lot of varied agriculture, a lot of immigrants coming every day from different parts of not only Europe, but heavily influenced by the European Mediterranean area. And they were bringing a lot of grapes and a lot of wine practices. A lot of things that kind of got lost because of mass industrialization, because of things like Cabernet Sauvignon taking over and people saying, well, I'm going to make a lot more money if I rip out this interesting varietal and that interesting varietal, and we'll just plant a bunch of Cab Sauvignon and smack a label on it and sell it. And that worked for a while, but what you're really seeing right now is reincarnations of the old school practices. And so this guy, Matthew Rorick, who makes this wine, this is a really interesting label. So it's Matthew Rorick, R-O-R-I-C-K, and he has his own wine label, but this is a label that he makes called Forlorn Hope. And it's sort of that, but what it really comes from, and this is really cool, is there was Dutch brigades called, and I'm going to mess up my Dutch because I don't speak it, but Forlorn Hope, which was given to the brigades of people who would basically charge enemy lines hoping to break them. And you know, the bravest of the brave, but to the brave and successful go the spoils. So it was this, you know, dare to be bold. And if you make it, you're going to be, you know, live in not in infamy, but in fame and happiness and healthiness. So he took that name, Forlorn Hope, from that, and I thought that was kind of cool. And I watched a really cool interview with this guy, and he was basically talking about this time when, you know, and this is a story that is repeated in every industrialized nation, is there was a time when there was a lot of really, really cool things being planted because that's what people brought with them. That's what they knew. That's right. What they kind of hoped would work. And maybe it didn't. And maybe all of a sudden there was no wine that would support your family or no whatever, you know, name the product that would support your family, but you gave it a go because it's what you knew. So this guy is making wines that are you know, using these varietals, but he's also making them in the way that they were probably made. That brings us to orange wines. Orange wines are not made with oranges. Let's start there. Orange wines have gotten a lot of press mixed in with the natural wine movement. What are they? They are, ready? White wines, white varietals made like red wines. They have no orange coloring. They take their color from the skins of the grape, just like red wines. Rosés are really popular. Orange wines people regard with certain suspicion. Here's the difference. Very little. red wines that you drink that are red have spent a lot of time on their red skins and withdraw the pigment from them. Rosé wines have spent some time on the skins and withdraw the pink, and then they're removed from the skins, and there you go. Orange wines are white varietals like the Pinot Gris or Grigio that we're drinking today. Why is it called Pinot Grigio or gray? Because the skin is a grayish orange. It's not translucent white. So when you leave the juice in contact with the, you crush the grapes, you leave the juice in contact with the skins, and you walk away, and it takes the pigment. And orange wines in particular are made that way because they had a lot of white varietals and they made them in the same style as red, which is put them in amphora and clay vessels in the earth, which maintained the temperature for good solid fermentation. And then they dig them up. And that's, you know, you hear about all these, you know, Georgian and all these other, you know, antiquated techniques. That's what they did. They used the earth because it was there. They didn't have a lot of fancy, you know, stainless steel vessels with temperature controlled belts and this and that controlled by, you know, satellites in space. They had the earth. They had clay vessels. They had white varietals. They had red varietals. And all orange wine is white wines that have been crushed, put in a vessel, and left to ferment, sometimes for days, sometimes for a long time. Now, the wine we're drinking right now, as the gentleman here can attest, is vividly orange.
Mm.
I mean, it is like deep. This was on skins for a long time. You can taste and feel the tannin, just like in a red wine. I read in one of the articles preparing for today that it's almost like a tea sensation because, you know.
Mm, yeah.
But it's wonderful. It's silky. It's beautiful. It is not overly oxidized, even though it, you know, has that orange hue and you might think it's oxidized. But there's a lot of different types of wine that essentially spend time in contact with the skins. Some of them look orange, some of them don't. But if you're interested in this sort of concept of what a white wine is like after it spends time with skins, maybe come on in to us or your favorite wine merchant and not necessarily ask for orange wines and be married to that term, but skin contact. I like that. That was, again, another article. Skin contact wines. There's a lot of white wines that are like that, that aren't necessarily deep orange hued like this Dragone Romato that we're having today, but are indeed, you know, that very deep, rich quality. So I advise you just go out and keep trying stuff like this. It's really cool. As I said, it's a throwback to how wines used to be made. Maybe it's better, maybe it's worse, but the final product is awfully tasty. So check that out. October tasting at Bangor Wine and Cheese is the 18th from 5 to 7. We'll be doing Pacific Northwest wines and perhaps a guest, perhaps not. I haven't decided yet. We'll figure that out as time goes by. But until then, cheers and thanks for listening.
Thank you, Eric Mann, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company. And I feel much more hope than forlorn. This is good.
That's what wine does.
Mm.